Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Shall we begin?
61.
Hello and welcome to episode 61 of The School for Dumb Women, the podcast where we try to investigate the things we know nothing about. I'm your host woman, scientific experiment which the tabloids call against nature, Hannah Varrell. With me is Love Baby, who floated down the river in a basket, Alexandra Haddo.
I actually suffer from seasickness, Hannah, and the state I was in, it's a wonder anyone fished me out.
And conjured from the armpit of a wise owl, Caroline O'Donoghue.
I'm sticky, smelly, and I represent third level education. Hoot hoot.
This week we're learning about Beanie Babies, Tina Turner, how to sneak with Dr. Jane Frail, and how to keep up with the news in our smart lesson. Caroline, you were full of promises in the 90s, but it's just not come to anything, has it?
No, people really thought that my resale value would be through the roof, but actually I'm worth next to nothing. Hmm. What am I?
Are you the lesser known members of Take That?
I am not. I am Beanie Babies. But just, you know, they're equally a sort of limp and sort of adorable.
Yeah, and full of polystyrene or something.
Yeah. They call them pellets in the business, actually.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Okay, so two things that can identify a Beanie Baby. What are they?
The tag.
The tag.
Oh, yes. And I was going to say the little, like, sort of balls inside them.
It's the balls and the tag, yeah. The tag and the balls. Same as how you identify bulls is how you identify Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
The tag and the balls. Yeah, so the thing that most people remember and the sort of certificate of authenticity of the Beanie Baby was the T-Y that was on the on the little thing on their ear, and you could
little
even buy
heart-shaped TY.
Heart-shaped TY
for our international. Beanie Babies were international, weren't they?
They were. They started in America, but they did ship internationally. They were a huge thing all over the world. And that TY, I never knew what that stood for.
No,
a toy company.
Did you have you found out?
Is it not just thank you in text?
Right. I almost thought that was something like thank you.
Yeah.
Right. So it's named after its founder, whose name is Ty Warner. It's not T-Y, it's Ty.
What?
That's his name, Ty
that
Warner.
That is the most egotistical thing I've ever heard.
I mean, they were his invention. And honestly, I think people talk about like Steve Jobs or whatever being this amazing genius, but I don't think there has been a genius to parallel Ty Warner in our lifetime. It's incredible. I need to just get straight into the story because it's amazing.
Okay.
Okay, so Ty Warner, born in Chicago, 1944, he has a kind of a troubled upbringing. His mom suffers from a lot of quite serious mental health issues, not a very happy childhood. He decides to move to Los Angeles when he's in his 20s and tries to become an actor. That fails terribly. Like so many people's Hollywood dreams, just completely nothing happens. And then by the time he's in his 30s, he's working in his dad's toy company as basically a traveling salesman.
Right.
Like for so many people, like you're back home, you're single, you're in your 30s, you're working at your dad's company. That's kind of the end of the story, right?
Yeah.
But okay, so this toy company, he ends up being, maybe he wasn't a good actor, but he was a really, really good traveling salesman. And because he had that sort of like acting thing going on, he had a lot of like flair. And he realized that like the world of toys is a kind of eccentric one. And that if he were to like get out at a toy dealership, out of a rented Rolls Royce with a cane and a fur coat on, that people would be like, what mad toy is he selling?
Yeah.
Because kids are going to love it, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah,
do you
yeah.
know what I mean? He had this like weird like flair for presentation. He had a very strange character about him that people were kind of intrigued by. And for some reason, he was really good at predicting what the market was going to want. Like, he would recommend a toy and it would do well.
So the company he worked for, his dad's company, they yeah. just sold all sorts of toys.
Yeah, they were called Dakin, D-A-K-I-N.
Like your average run-of-the-mill toys.
Yeah. And so he gets so good at sort of predicting what does well with children and what toys are popular that he decides that he's going to start making his own toys. And in 1986, he comes up with essentially the idea for Beanie Babies, which is that up until that point, stuffed animals are quite like rigid, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of filled with that, with fluff.
Yeah.
Cottony bits.
Yeah. Filling.
Bit starchy.
Filling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're quite rigid, but he decided to fill them with these beans. And because he didn't fill them all the way up and they had that kind of limp sort of...
Yeah, so you move the beans around the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. I mean, it doesn't really give you anything. Like, there's no... You're not getting anything out of the snaggy beans
toy. Yeah, it's just kind of satisfying, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think especially from a child point of view, they become much more easy to play with because they're more durable and, I don't know, they're just satisfying.
You can sit them up on their hind legs.
Yes, you can. I spy a Beanie Baby fan. Did you have a loss?
Who's that?
I honestly, I didn't even ask because I didn't think that you guys would be Beanie Baby fans.
Oh, hugely. I mean,
really?
I didn't have tons and tons because my parents are not the kind of parents who would indulge that.
No, not mine.
But I probably had like 30 or something.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. 20,
oh, no, but I had friends who had like hundreds.
Yeah, yeah.
But I probably had like 25, 30.
Mm. I can't remember if I had any, which probably means I wasn't that big of a fanatic. I remember my friends having a lot and I remember the fad of it and I remember the craze hugely. But I don't know if I ever had any myself.
Yeah.
How about you?
I kind of the same between you two, that my best friend had an amazing collection because her father travelled for work a lot and he would always buy the bear
the
of that country.
Ones.
The international bears. And then we found out that those international bears were worth a lot. So then we became like, oh my God, we're sitting on a gold mine, but we don't know how to use the internet. So we'll always be sitting on it.
Yeah.
And we played with them a lot. I really liked them, but I only had a couple of my own. She would always be a little bitch about it as well, where she'd like loan you out a Beanie Baby, but then once you had a fight with her, she'd like ask for them all back and you'd be like,
oh God, I do remember that's ringing a bell. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's toy politics, you know, you can't get away from them.
Classic toy politics.
Classic toy politics.
Very different as an adult.
Ty Warner, he eventually gets fired from the original toy company for pursuing his own stuff on the side. And then he launches, he basically mortgages his house, he gets all these loans.
Wait, when did he get a house? Oh, because he did so well at his dad's job.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I love how he got fired by his own dad for doing well.
Well, no, his dad just worked there. It wasn't his dad's company.
Oh, I see. Right,
sorry, I misrepresented him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, his dad was just a guy who worked there and then he was just a guy who worked there.
Right, got you.
You know. And he started going around trying to sell these Beanie Babies and people like didn't get them. They said they used to look like roadkill, which I can kind of understand where they're coming from. But then he starts selling in to sort of small toy shops and people like them and they're doing well. And he does this incredibly clever thing where he refuses to sell to the big brands like Toys R Us and he only sells to the independent shops.
Mm.
And he won't give the whole collection to any one shop. So he'll give like, a donkey, a flamingo and a dog over here. And then he'll give like a bear, a tarantula and a bird over there.
Oh, right.
And so you have to kind of go, if you wanted to get that collectible thing, you'd have to go to both shops. And
he's creating a demand.
He basically created an artificial demand and he kept experimenting with this where he would like suddenly discontinue a toy and be like, no more of that anymore. And then like because eBay was booming at the same time, this is the 90s. People would be like, oh, well, I got to finish the collection because people were kind of getting into that collection mode.
Yeah.
And as well, up until that point, the big toy retailers or the big toy factories, they would release stuff like twice a year. They'd release their stuff at Christmas time and they'd release their stuff in summertime. But he was making these $5 toys that he was releasing sporadically with no plan.
Yeah.
And he kept all of his own employees in the dark about when things were coming out and he would just like sound the alarm when they were. And so that you could get like 5 in 1 month and 2 in the next and then nothing for 6 months.
Yeah.
And it just created this weird bubble. People just got really, really, really into it.
Yeah.
And like you could have certain bears not available in certain countries, and it just the resale of the whole thing got really, really huge, and it became a craze, like a genuine craze, like a family who owned $100,000 worth of Beanie Babies.
What?
Like, there's a very famous image of this couple who got divorced, and they had a shared collection of hundreds of Beanie Babies, and there's a very famous image where they've like laid out all their Beanie Babies on the courtroom floor, and they have to to deliberate with the judge who owns what. And you know, there was such a huge demand, and it was basically being treated like cocaine in some circles. Like, you know, you had to sort of know the right people to get the right baby.
Bloody hell.
So there were actually deaths, shootings, kids being trampled on. So at a market in Connecticut, kids got trampled on their hands over a tie-dye Garcia bear, which I actually remember. He was like a hippie bear.
Oh, yeah, that rings a bell.
Mm-hmm. A 77-year-old Chicago man dubbed the Beanie Baby Bandit stole £1,200 worth of toys and hoarded them in a storage locker.
How much was your average one? I've forgotten.
The average was, I think, between $5 and $10.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. So it wasn't actually that.
They were super affordable because there were so many of them. They were super collectible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And a West Virginian man shot and killed a 63-year-old security guard over a dispute involving several hundred dollars worth of Beanie Babies.
Oh, no. Fucking hell.
I quote, "He didn't want the cash register. All he wanted was the Beanie Babies."
That's insane.
That's a horrible way to go.
Right?
Yeah.
Defending Beanie Babies?
Yeah.
It's insane. And the thing is that one of the reasons that it started off as being this sort of thing that children and then their parents, I suppose, got into, and I suppose, you know, comic book nerds and people who were into collecting things.
Yeah.
But then because everybody got so into the idea of this $5 bear sold for 12 grand on eBay yesterday, and they attached the worth to the bear as not being this weird fad. They were like, no, they're worth something, like gold or coffee. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were like, the bear is a resource. There was tips on buying bears for investment, like the way you'd buy art for investment.
That's mad.
I remember as well, this is another part of the scam, thinking it was important to have, you know, you could get the plastic covers for the
yes,
labels.
And they were really expensive.
Yeah, it was £2 for a plastic cover or something like that. And I remember buying some because I was like, well, I don't want the label to get ruined when I play with the Beanie Baby.
Yeah,
I want to be able
yeah.
to sell this in 20 years.
Right? Because there was weird presumption that the bubble would keep on inflating and that no one would lose interest ever. Do you know
and
what I mean?
Yet,
which was silly.
We all had these. We all had the Beanie Babies. Who was going to be buying them? We all had them.
Totally. And there was this kind of fake scarcity thing. Do you know what I mean? That even though every 8-year-old had them, it's the idea of you don't have the right one, and you could be sitting on the right one and not know it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. There was that feeling.
Yeah.
I remember that.
So the crux of the mania happened in 1997 when Princess Diana died. Very sad, very defining moment for a lot of millennials, I think. And Ty Warner decided that he would commemorate the sad event with a bear.
That's
purple bear.
So weird.
With a white carnation. It's so fucking odd.
And that was his nail in the coffin, was it?
Nope, people loved it. People love that bear.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
people
no.
went for the bear. And also this was the bear because it was said as being so limited edition, even though it truly wasn't. It was everywhere, do you know what I mean?
Right.
And they were like, oh, this is going to be the one with the resale value. And I think people thought that was attached to this event.
Yeah.
So people bought it in its hundreds. And to this day, there is a toy shop in the States called Rogue Toys. And the manager, who's called Ethan Volungis, he has on his answering machine, if you're calling about trying to resell your Princess Diana bear, please don't bother me. I don't want it. And he's giving interviews being no one's buying these. People are only selling them, you know?
Oh.
And people still, they will put up their Diana bear for $45,000 on eBay just to see if anyone bites, and nobody does.
That's
so sad. It's a seller's
market.
You
might also like Princess Diana bear for 50p.
Yeah.
Totally. And then, one night in 1999, Ty Warner, he announced that several of his Beanie Babies, the designs, were going to be retired and discontinued, and you wouldn't be able to get them again. And every single time he had done this before, that had prompted a huge rush and a huge spike in Beanie Baby stock. And for the first time, nothing happened. There was no market swell, no value increase, nothing. And literally just the bubble had burst. People had like been like they'd moved on. And weirdly, that was actually the height of Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. Do you think there's a connection?
I think the connection there is that like children had lost interest. And so that sort of main, that crazed backbone of the trend had vanished. Because you can't rely on children's interest, can you? And so if people aren't buying them up, then there's no, there isn't that scarcity thing. And if that's not happening, then like, who cares? So everyone had just basically moved on. And nobody really made any good money out of it after that, except for Ty Warner, who is currently the 887th richest person in the world.
Whoa.
Which, you know, he's worth $2.7 billion. He's got at the Four Seasons New York, he's got the Ty Warner penthouse.
Oh.
Like, he is an incredibly rich man.
Fucking hell.
And do they still produce Beanie Babies? Or is the company kind of stopped
doing that? I think Ty Warner does different things now. They do another kind of stuffed animal that is like, it's got huge eyes. It's like these foresty creatures, like a huge like turquoisey eyes. You've seen them before. I think they're called bush babies or something like that. I've got a friend who collects them. But yeah, they're a similar thing, but I don't think he ever quite got to the same level.
Mm. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
But he's just like, I mean, how old is he now? Like,
he's 73.
Yeah.
Just, you know, one of the richest men going. Yeah. And just like a failed actor with a difficult childhood who worked for his dad's company because nothing was going right for him in Hollywood. And like then in his basically in his 40s, he becomes a billionaire.
Mm.
And he's been a billionaire ever since.
Wow.
It's kind of an amazing story, right?
Yeah. I had no idea. How should I never ask myself, like, who made this?
I've always thought whenever I think of Beanie Babies, it's like, you know, Faustian pacts where somebody sells their soul to the devil for one wish?
Yes.
It always feels like the Beanie Babies were the victim of a Faustian pact, right?
Yes.
And somebody made a deal with the devil to make a very, very popular toy.
Mm. What I always liked about them as well is they had a little poem inside the tag.
Do you remember any of them?
I remember some of them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Tell me them.
Oh my God.
I had Claude the Crab, and this one was, Claude the Crab lives by the sea, a famous painter he hopes to be. But the tide came in and his paint fell, now his art is on his shell, because he was a tie-dye crab.
I remember him! He was cutie!
He was nice!
Yeah.
I can't remember any of them.
One of my favourite ones was the Chicago Bulls one, the red bull with the white horns.
Mm, oh yeah.
He was just really cute. I just really liked him or her. And there was also a nice Cocker Spaniel, which I liked a lot.
I had the Cocker Spaniel.
Yeah, the lovely furry ears. It was a different like texture.
It was a different texture.
None of this is ringing a bell, so I feel like I didn't have them. And it sounds like the exact sort of craze that my dad would convince me I didn't want to get involved in because he didn't want to spend it.
Yeah, it's for the crowd, Amanda. Yeah. You're not a follower of the crowd.
Yeah.
I actually read a really good article about this being like people, like Beanie Babies have become sort of a punchline now, and they're sort of become, they're a weird symbol of the 90s of being this very garish, tacky kind of new money era that has no real soul or depth. But like, it's what's quite sort of nice and interesting and weirdly substantial about them is that like people for the first time felt like they could buy into something like art investment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was only $5 or $10. And if you were just really tenacious, you could do it. And
if you got the right one, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Bitcoin.
It's been compared to Bitcoin. You're not the first person to make that comparison.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's got a bit of that like Willy Wonka's golden ticket vibe.
Yeah. I do remember that feeling.
Bit of a lottery kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you could be sitting on a gold mine.
Exactly, because Ty Warner would discontinue them at any time, so you'd have no idea if the little Cocker Spaniel you bought is actually only one of 500 and they're not going to make any more.
Mm.
So they could become valuable even though they weren't when you bought them.
What a genius.
Right?
Let's start it up again, guys.
It is the closest thing to a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory phenomenon to ever happen in my lifetime, I think.
Wow. Guys, I've just got to pop out for a bit, actually.
Oh, why?
Because I looked at the show schedule and it says that Dr. Jane Frail is coming in. And according to her new book, How to Do You When Doing You Is What You Do to Get Through Being You, I should minimise situations where a stranger is likely to damage my self-esteem.
Oh, yeah, no, fair enough. I guess we'll see you later then.
It also talks about how I shouldn't be friends with people who don't stick up for me or act in my best interest.
Okay, babe, I'll give you a text later, okay?
Bye.
Safe home. Get me a Donald's.
For sake.
Hi, Dr. Jane.
Hello, dears. Aren't you two looking very glamorous today? And the studio is looking green and so lush as well.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Jane. You're not usually this nice to us.
Oh, sorry, dear. I took some dodgy MDMA at Lorraine Kelly's Halloween party and now I'm overcompensating in an attempt to ward off the cloud of crushing dread that is certainly coming for me.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yes, if I squint my eyes, I can actually see it barreling over the horizon looking to claim me.
Wow, well, I'm really glad you could come here today because you're here talking about sleep and that's something I actually have a lot of trouble with.
Oh, darling, so many people do. Honestly, what I wouldn't give for this fucking Mandy to wear off so I could finally get a minute's rest.
Jane, are you sure you don't want to have a little sleep or a wash or maybe some hula hoops before we start? You seem a bit...
Oh, I won't be able to eat a thing till Friday, dear, at this rate. But listen, if you're not on Mandy, and good for you if you're not, that's a lovely choice. Although it certainly doesn't feel like one when Lorraine is dressed as the ghostly mask boy from Scream and forcing you to take dabs out of a crisp packet of Space Invaders in her upstairs loo. I mean, what happened to keeping your smack in a clear plastic bag with Bob Marley's face on it? I ask you. A little class, you know. It goes a long way.
Certainly does, Jane.
Sorry, girls. Be back with you in the room in 3, 2, 1. Okay, sleeping, yes. Some good tips for getting to sleep at night is meditation and yoga before bed. No screens after 8 p.m. as the backlight stimulates your retinas. That one can be a bit of a hard one for people in this day and age.
Yeah, you've had a bit of a hard one, haven't you?
Yes, yeah. Fortunately, have. It was Jonathan Ross, the dirty bugger. And of course, the old chestnut of a bit of lavender spritz on your pillow and a steaming mug of chamomile tea. But after all that, when you lie down and you still can't get to sleep at night, just try and remember that you're only human, okay? Everyone makes mistakes, and that guilt is a useless emotion that you must purge from yourself if we're ever going to evolve as a species.
Okay, so guilt.
Listen, why should the things I've done keep me up at night, okay? Why should I, an attractive and very, very thin woman, be burdened by a timeless guilt about the things I had to do, the people I had to betray, and the prison snitches I had to carefully dismember with a bit of an old Coke can that was lovingly and painstakingly carved into a rudimentary knife?
I think they call that a shiv.
After all... Is the world not founded in endless pain? Do orangutans not get thrown into pits of acid so their homes can be used for palm oil every day? In the grand scheme of things, is it really my responsibility as a very, I must say, very thin and shockingly beloved TV doctor to stay awake at night thinking of my sins?
Dr. Jane, I hate to interrupt you, but I think you're on an unbelievably hard come down by the looks of it. And, you know, it's fine if you want to have a lie down somewhere else.
Yeah, that existential dread that you mentioned earlier has definitely found you.
Oh, you're probably right, dears. Well, I'll see you next time, eh? Unless anyone's got any Valium?
Not today, Jane.
Right. Well, death is coming for us all then. Good luck with your sleep.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Alex, you're simply the worst at coming up with subjects for this podcast, so you just go with whatever is on your iPod, is that right?
That's right, and this week it was Simply the Best by...
Yes. Better than anyone.
We have to stop.
It's good.
Anyone, you know.
I can't stop. It's just hard.
Yes, my section this week.
Go on.
Is on Beyonce. No. is on Tina Turner, which is not her real name.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. What do you know about Tina Turner?
I've seen Angela Bassett in What's Love Got to Do with It.
Oh, you've seen it?
I've seen it. It was on TV a lot when I was a kid.
You know much more than me. Well, not now.
Well, no, I know that version of events, which is that she was a singer and then she got married to Ike and he was the big wig and then he abused her and then she left and she was like, went into a hotel and she was like, I don't have a penny on me, but my name is Tina Turner and I swear I'll pay you back.
Yeah, it's amazing. She's like, she has got an incredible story. So her real name is Anna May Bullock. And she was born to like some parents that didn't really care. And like, she was sort of ferried between family members and nobody really brought her up and stuff like that. And then she was, this is in St. Louis. And she was born in Nutbush, hence Nutbush City
Nutbush!
Limits.
Nutbush!
Nutbush City Limits.
I love the segment already because you get to scream so much when you're doing it.
Yeah. And one day when she was about 17, she came across Ike Turner and his band, Kings of Rhythm, original. Oh. In a local
club. The Kings,
club.
You say?
The Kings. The Sultans of Swing. The Kings of Rhythm.
Yeah, it doesn't have a quite same ring to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ike Turner was the lead singer, and it's kind of okay. I've recently watched A Star Is Born, and it sounds like a real life version of that a little bit because she kind of went into this club, and then one day, like after somebody heard her singing backstage, they were like, "Oh, let's give Anna May a go, singing along like in the club live."
Right,
and then she wasn't exactly even really really good. She had people were always like, "Oh, her voice is gravelly and like scratchy and stuff," which it kind of is, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like quite screechy.
Oh, but she's got the thing.
She's got the thing. And then one day they were recording an album. They finally got a studio album, and the woman that was supposed to sing the female vocals didn't turn up.
Oh,
and her life is very musical biopic, right?
It is. It really is. Yeah. And I think there's a West End show coming out next year called I, Tina, based on her autobiography, because it is kind of like an incredible story, really.
Yeah, all the plot beats are really there.
Yeah.
Who, me? I couldn't possibly.
Yeah, it's very.
I will
like
sing
that
on your album.
Yeah. So she stepped in, and then the record did really well, and then her and Ike became Ike and Tina Turner. Also, so basically, her name was Anna May Bullock, but he gave her the name. This should have told you that he was a bad egg. Mm. He gave her that name so that if she left him, he could just get another woman in and call her Tina Turner.
Oh, what? So great. Tina Turner was
guy.
Like a,
Tina Turner's just like a made up name, and because it rhymed with Sheena, which was a character that he really liked from something.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, bad.
What a way to erase someone's identity. Be like, right, you're called Tina Turner, but the character of you is Tina Turner.
Yeah.
If you leave me, someone else can be Tina Turner.
Yeah. So, essentially. Wow. Also, she had a baby with Ike's bandmate before she got with Ike.
Oh.
And their relationship originally was apparently very, like, brother and sister, and she really trusted him, and they were very like non-sexual. Like, he said he saw her as a little sister.
Right.
She was, and apparently the first time they ever had sex was because. So, in case anybody doesn't know, Tina Turner eventually went on to marry Ike.
In case anyone doesn't know.
Yeah, I know, but just in case. And the first time she slept with him was because she went into his room to get away from another guy that was like trying to hit on her. I don't think in a forceful way. I think he was just like being a bit forward, and she wasn't up for it. And then she was like, "Oh, can I just stay here?" Because they had such a brother-sisterly relationship, and then he was like, "Oh, just do it with me once," and then they kind of took up, and then they got married.
So was it like predatory, or was she like, "Oh, I'm attracted to Ike now"?
No, I think it was like maybe a bit of confusion. Like, oh, we're really close and like we get on.
Mm. Oh God, we've all been there.
Yeah, we've all been there. And yeah, and then so she started getting with Ike, and then they got married when she was 22. Mm-hmm. So she already had a son with his bandmate. she got married. They got married when she was 22 and he was 27. And on their wedding night, he took her to watch a live sex show in Tijuana.
Oh. Yeah.
And she was like upset and everything. And then there's the part of the story that everybody knows, which is that Ike Turner was a really, really abusive husband, and it was awful. And I'm sorry to bring Jay-Z into this, but Jay-Z is a twat.
Oh, when in that verse in Drunk in Love?
Yeah.
So what does this have to do with that?
In Drunk in Love with Beyonce featuring Jay-Z, I'm going to sing a bit of Jay-Z. Yeah.
Are you just meowing?
Yeah. I've been drinking. So in that, quite frankly, great song.
Yes.
Jay-Z raps. And I'm gonna sing the two lines to you that he says, which you will recognize. Jay-Z says, "Catch change, I might beat up the box like Mike. In '97, I bike. I'm Ike Turner. Turn up, baby, no, don't play. Now eat the cake, anime. Now eat the cake, anime." Oh. That's her real name, anime.
Yeah,
and it's because in real life, in a diner one time, just after Tina Turner's record had gone like to number one or done really successfully, two kids came up to Ike and Tina in a diner and asked for her autograph and not his.
Right.
And then he was like, oh, let's celebrate your record with a big cake. And then he bought a cake and she was like, oh, I don't want any. And he like force fed her it.
Jeez.
And then Jay-Z's just fucking rapping about it.
What was Jay-Z trying to say about it?
Well, I sort of read the lyrics and I don't really know. Like, and when he says beat the box up like
Mike Tyson
in 97 I bite, so like convicted rapist Mike Tyson biting someone's ear off in the ring.
Yeah. I've always been very uncomfortable with that verse. I don't really know what's going on.
And then
there.
It's like, now eat the cake, anime. I said eat the cake. It's like really horrible. And Beyonce's then like, I've been drinking.
I don't know if we want to outwardly criticise Beyonce. We're allowed to criticise Jay-Z because he doesn't have a hive anymore.
Yeah, sure.
But we're not getting the hive after us.
No, we're not getting the hive after
us. My insurance doesn't cover hive.
What are Jay-Z's fans called? Just like Zeds.
The Zeds.
Snores. Yeah, so Jay-Z, bad person for bringing that up. Because that was quite a famous incident that occurred, that he was like really abusive like that. And then eventually, this story has a nice ending, by the way. That's why I was glad that I depicted it in the end. So after years of abuse and horrible things, and she also had a son with Ike, Tina Turner was in a hotel with him. Oh, he was like a massive coke addict as well, and it was basically spiraling out of control. Yeah. Meanwhile, her music was like doing better and better. And then she was in a hotel with him, and she was like, "Right, that's it. I've got to go." She left. She had to cross the freeway to get on foot just to get to the next hotel. And a lorry like nearly ran her over. She went, and like Caroline said, she went into the next hotel, and I don't think it was as poetic as that. Maybe in the film it is.
Yeah.
But she said she just went in there and she was like, "I've got nothing. I've got 36 cents on me. I'm Tina Turner. Like, I need to stay here tonight," basically.
Yeah.
And then she just left him. And
that
she
thing
never
of like being the most famous singer in the world at that point, but like having not a dime to her name.
Yeah, nothing.
Wow.
And she because she walked out on him midway through a tour, they sued her, and she was completely broke and destitute for years because she had to like forfeit the money that they lost from the rest of the tour.
Tina.
I know.
Wow.
Considering like she was fleeing I don't think that would happen today, but like,
I mean, Kesha.
Yeah,
Kesha,
actually true. Yeah.
Like, had to tried for years to get out of that abusive contract that basically forced her to work with her abuser.
Yeah.
And like the judge was like, "Well, if we start making exceptions for everyone, then everyone will be breaking their contracts." It's like, do you have no compassion at all? So things haven't changed that much.
Yeah, true. You're right. But
she got really into Buddhism then, didn't she?
She's very into Buddhism. She was so into it that at one point she used to chant for 3 hours a day.
Ooh.
Yeah. But what I found fascinating was after she had to pay all this money out for like the tour and everything, that was before all the hits that you know.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah. So then she played like small clubs for like years, just getting by. Kind of like as a club singer, and you know, she'd been this huge star, and then she recorded a version of Al Green, "Let's Stay Together," and it went stratospheric, and then her career just like took off again. She's played to the biggest audience ever, which was in Rio, 184,000 people. She sold 200 million records. She's basically like Oprah was like, she's before Beyonce and everything, she was the first black woman to be like the queen of rock and roll. Like, she started off as, like, R&B and rhythm and blues and stuff like that, but which is the same thing. but, you know, she is a rock and roll star, basically. And she's fucking amazing. Also, she's famous for her legs.
Her very muscular, very active legs.
Yeah, and, she's, and one of her biggest fans was Mick Jagger. And she toured with the Stones. I think he fancied her. Right. So Ike and Tina toured with the Rolling Stones and stuff. And she accused Mick Jagger of stealing her moves. Which, like, if you can see them both in your head now, you can kind of see that. And also, David Bowie was also instrumental in getting her career back on track, because after she recorded Let's Stay Together, he was like, she needs to get a record deal, and, like, really helped her out. And I was like, David Bowie is such a nice guy.
Oh, that's nice.
And also, I think he really liked her as well. And there's a video of him after she's left Ike, David Bowie coming out on stage and singing a duet with her. And he, like, propositions her in her ear halfway through singing, live on stage. And she's, like, giggling and flirting back. And I'm like, maybe they slept together that night.
Oh, maybe they did. I love the idea that she came out with, like, abusive marriage, and then she just, like...
And then all these hot men fans.
These hot rock stars. But, like, you know, Bowie, who's, like, respectful of women for the most part, we think, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so just to round off in a nice way, she didn't have any serious relationships for years and years and years. And then she met, like, 20 years later, 16 years later, she met a guy called... Erwin Bach, who
Erwin
is
Bach.
A German music manager.
Landon Auger. Yes.
And he is 17 years her junior.
Oh.
She's now 78.
She looked great, though.
She still seen looks her, cracking. Yeah. They were together for... They've been together for, like, 25 years.
Aww.
And she now lives in Switzerland. She's a Swiss citizen. They live on a lake in a lovely big house. And he looks like the nicest man ever. And then in... 2013, she was like, I just realised, like, if anything happens to me, if I die, you won't get any of my money. And he was like, oh, I don't want any of your money. And she was like, no, I want you to have it. So they got married. She wore a black dress.
Yes, excellent.
Amazing. Good. And Bryan Adams, who is a close personal friend, sang at the wedding. And I watched footage of the wedding today and I cried. Because they've just got such a lovely, like, it's just such a nice end to the story of, like, she finally met this really, really lovely younger guy who was, like, really supportive of her and also, like, died in 2007, so fuck off.
Did he just die of painless or painless alone?
I think he died of cancer, I'm not sure. I think the endless drugs probably didn't help. I was like, this is a lovely rags-to-riches story with a lot of crap in the middle, but she seems to have just have, like, a very calm Swiss life with this German music manager.
Get that chill Swiss
called
life.
Erwin. Like, who would think that Tina Turner lived on a lake in Switzerland? Imagine if you were like, oh, I'm just going skiing. Is that Tina Turner?
Yeah. Like, it's one reason to like there, because famously we don't like there as a
podcast. No, we don't. No, no.
So it's one mark.
Yeah.
One gold star.
A mark for Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's now time for our Smart Lesson, the segment in which we attempt to make ourselves more intelligent, more woke, and above all, more Instagrammable feminists. Today our Smart Lesson topic is how to read the news. As smart women, it's important for us to be up to date with what's happening in not only the country we live in, but also every other country. Otherwise, you're a terrible racist and you might as well join the BNP.
Again.
But, as you will have noticed, the news is deeply depressing these days. So, what's the best way to stay on top of things without bursting into tears? Any tips, guys?
I like to just read the Daily Mash, the Poke, and Reductress, and things that aren't really news.
Oh, so like satirical news that isn't.
Yeah, and then you can work your way backwards, being like, okay, they're doing some satire, I find funny.
Yeah.
Maybe I assume something happened in the White House.
I assume the world is on fire because Donald Trump has called all Jewish people something racist or similar.
I like to, every time I see someone say something like, guess the world's on fire again on Twitter, but they're not really adding to the discussion. They're just adding to a sense of general hysteria.
General doom, yeah.
I unfollow them and I follow one dog.
Oh, that's a lovely idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
So lots of, like, ignoring it so far. But I think we need to find a way of, like, kind of safely consuming news so that you're up to date but not too up to date. So
I am finding it very hard to find that balance, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One thing I thought we could do is only read every other word or every three words in a news report.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, like, get the gist, but not too much of the actual gore.
Yeah.
Mm.
I thought that could
work. So it would just be like, Donald has migrant offend.
Exactly.
And you're like, great.
And then you're like, well, I know what the story is, but I don't actually literally know what the story is.
Yeah.
One thing I might take up is reading print again, getting an actual newspaper instead of just looking on like an app or whatever.
That's actually a really good idea.
And making sure you have a boiled egg and some toast with marmalade with it.
Oh, very nice.
Just make it into a breakfast newspaper. And
that's
then
really
you make
plan.
The experience so much more pleasant.
As well, and because newspaper people, like, they've gone to school for their job, generally. and they like, have been doing it for a long time. So they're pretty good at being like, here's the big thing on the environment, but also, like, here's a bit about somebody who's rescued an old lady or somebody who's, you know, made friends with a bird.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're quite good at because they've been doing... Newspapers have been going on for about 250 years, I guess. And they're really good at measuring what people actually can physically take into their brain.
Yeah,
the internet has not learned this yet.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
That's true.
And also with the newspaper, if that's too hard with your breakfast and your marmalade and everything, you could just start from the back and stop when you get bored. And for me, that would just be as soon as it gets to like cricket or football or any of that.
Yeah, so you do the crossword at the back and then some cricket and you stop.
Yeah. Like, that's enough for today.
I actually heard a really good tip on the Nobody Panic podcast where Stevie Martin said where every time she can't give up social media completely because for work and you have to see who's trying to contact you or whatever.
Yeah.
But she's banned herself from scrolling. So she only ever sees the topmost thing on Twitter. But like otherwise, nothing.
That's interesting.
And she sees her mentions, obviously.
Another thing you could do is just pick one issue to care about. Do you reckon that would work? If you were like, I care about global warming.
It
or
works
the
for the Green Party, yeah.
Or Brexit.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about Brexit now. We've all
given up on that.
We're,
I think,
sodden with Brexit.
Yeah. Here's another thing I'm finding with the news cycle and particularly the sort of the Twittery reaction to the news cycle or whatever, is that I'm getting it's really hard for me to tell when news is genuinely terrible. Or we're just being kind of snarky, you know? Because people are being, like, snarky about genuinely horrible things, like Donald Trump saying something terrible about Jewish people or whatever.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, brother, because they're so worn down, do you know what I mean, by, like, how much... But then when, like, you know, something might... Like
Piers Morgan says something about men holding babies.
Yeah. It's like, we're giving
it's
everything...
Like awful, but not, like...
Yeah, we're giving everything the
be.
Same level of like eye rolling. Oh, my God, what's happening now? The world's on fire. And so I was reading like people's reaction to the budget and I was like, OK, well, they've pledged $2 billion to mental health services. That's OK. And like, obviously, I don't want there to be a Tory government either. But like, if they're doing good things, then that's something to feel OK about. And I felt like that was a really controversial opinion to have.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Maybe we should ban discussion of the news from Twitter. Would that work?
Oh God! Imagine if remember like when Twitter first came out and everyone was like, "Oh, it's just about people talking about having a sandwich and doing a poo." It's like, I wish.
God, I want that.
I long for that time back.
Such a great poo today.
Now
guys.
It's like,
did
sad.
You? Uh-huh. Tell me about it.
I was in a cafe.
Oh.
Right in the middle of the floor. Fabulous. Anyway, I think that's a few pieces of advice, some good and some not so good. Mm-hmm. That maybe we'll start to follow them.
And maybe just having a bit of a rant, really.
Yeah.
I kind of derailed that one.
That's okay.
Not unlike the news on Twitter, actually.
What I like to do on the weekend is just read the supplements.
Oh yeah.
I look at the front cover of the Sunday Times. Do I read it? No. I put it on my bed every Sunday to be like, read this. You're 30. No, I just read Style and the magazine.
Sometimes magazine fools you because you're like, look, I'm looking at all these lovely pictures from Rohingya. He's taking some lovely soulful pictures of that. I'm learning. It's like, but you haven't read about what the problem
and
is.
And then it's like, Melvin Bragg and his son on how they get on. You're like, isn't this lovely?
Lynn Barber's annoyed again.
Yeah.
You'll never guess why.
Well, that's the end of the episode, and thank you for listening. If you have a question for us, please feel free to get in touch with us on our email, dumbwomenpod@gmail.com, or on social media, @dumbwomenpod.
And remember to rate, review, and subscribe, so we don't have to ask you to do it anymore.
Thank you to Harry Harris for our jingles, Gavin Day for our artwork, and Soho Radio Studios for the recording space. We'll be back next week. Goodbye!
Bye!
Goodbye! Don't buy any Beanie Babies! Okay, one, two, three. What's love got to do got to do with it? What's love but a second-hand emotion?
See ya.
Sounded very Bee Gees.